A Psalm of David.
This is Sarah de Nordwall, and this is the Bardcast, Bardcast number 14, in which we are inspired by the bards of ancient Ireland to speak truth to the king without fear and to entertain all from the peasant to the king. So, this is a taste of Bard School online, on air. And what I'm hoping to achieve, I'm Sarah, a bard with a bard school, is to encourage you by reflections and poems, including listeners' poems, to write some poems, stories and songs of your own that can reflect and share some of the light that's been put into your own heart as well, because the world needs it. And you know, today I'm recording so that the programme will go out on Divine Mercy Sunday. And it will also be the day before the Feast of the Annunciation, which very rarely happens because normally it would be the 25th of March. And so I'm going to do something to bring those two marvellous feasts together. Now, I'm going to be beginning, as usual, with a listener's poem, because I'm always inspired by hearing how different experiences of the faith strike different people. Every one of us has such a different personality that the way the world touches us is more suited to touch somebody else, maybe just one other person. And as it says in the book of Habakkuk, write the vision down. So we've all been living this beautiful octave of Easter, and we may think we've finished with Calvary, but of course it is the key to every door. And we are going to begin with Jackie Garrett again. She just sent me the best poem, so I'm just going to share it with you. And she recorded it for me. Please do send yours in. I'm dying to share them too. But I loved the way she looked at the idea of Calvary, and I wonder if it will appeal to you too as something to help you get through yours.
Sooner or later, everyone meets their Calvary. That's how a Catholic priest explained it years ago to me. That is if you're lucky, he said. Your life could be pain-free, but disaster's the really helpful thing, though it feels like Calvary. You're cornered, nowhere to run. You're forced to admit defeat. You're in a pickle, a proper one, and there's nothing that can be done, not by you or anyone. You've met your Calvary. You're at the end of your powers, used all your resources and still need more. Then in despair you start to hope there's something more. Then when you're really on your knees, all you can do is pray for willingness to accept the fact that life's not gone your way. I know, it's hard. Who would do that? Be grateful life's gone wrong. But bitterness and rage in time give way to joyful song. Of course, you don't feel that at first. But as the years recede, the thing you wept and raged about becomes the very thing you need. You come to trust what broke you, the force you cannot see, that brought you to and saved you from your personal Calvary.
So what I really enjoyed about that was, I always love the light tone with which she writes about serious things, but the way she says, the thing you wept and raged about becomes the very thing you need, you come to trust what broke you, that force you cannot see, that brought you to and saved you from your personal Calvary. And I can definitely relate to that inner drama of thinking that this difficulty has brought me to the end of myself and I do not want to go any further. But something that I often saw in the diary of Saint Faustina who was Jesus's chosen secretary of mercy. I'll tell you a little bit about this feast if you don't know what it exactly is. But what he told her was that the difficulties would never, ever get in the way. In fact, they would be bringing about his will. So every life of a saint always brings me to a fresh paradigm, a new context for how to think about my life and to not stumble over the difficulties, not to fall into despair. And if I ever do, to take it straight to confession and find what lies behind it. And generally, it's a kind of a fear of suffering. And that's another thing that saints learn not to have, or if they do, they overcome it. And reading what they write, their wow moments, their visions, their stories, is a way of sort of imparting to us the encouragement we need to step forward. And that is also, amazingly, what our writings and songs can do for others, which is what the real arts are meant to be about. The bard is meant to draw you into the real story. So I just wanted to tell you a little bit about what I saw on the back of her diary, just in case you didn't know what this feast was. It says here that just before the beginning of World War II, there was a young Polish nun, uneducated. She only had 3 years of schooling. And Jesus spoke to her and said, "I'm sending you with my mercy to the people of the whole world. I do not want to punish mankind, but I desire to heal it, pressing it to my merciful heart." And then he says this amazing thing. "I've chosen you for that office in this and the next life." So that was another paradigm shift. It's like, wow, yeah, God chooses us for a mission in this life, but he also has a mission for us in the next. And I thought that was fascinating. And one reason why I particularly love St. Faustina is that she teaches me that what happens in one human heart really matters to the world. What happens in your heart really matters to God, and it really matters even to world politics, because intimacy with God in one human heart is the engine room of world affairs. That's what one learns from reading St. Faustina's diary. And so you can see all the way through this remarkable book that sufferings and contradictions, disappointments are in no way an indication that your life is going wrong. As with Jackie's poem, you're actually receiving a revelation. So if I read Jackie's poem and this diary and I think, actually, if I consider my life to be some kind of a benignly designed assault course for my soul to learn the virtues that make it shine helpfully for other people, then I'm going to have a different attitude to the things that are going on for me. So what is also encouraging, though, is that these difficulties are always balanced out by consolations and revelations. And it's those that I want to focus on today, because this is a program in which I always give you one, sometimes three, perhaps confusingly or helpfully, writing prompts so that you can pick up your pen in your prayer time or perhaps straight after the program with a cup of tea and just let something sink in and write it down, so that you can share it with others. Because you would be amazed how valuable what you find obvious, perhaps, is to other people. And also, as we've discovered, the writing process itself reveals new things to you. Now, these that I want to focus on are those wow moments, or those moments of revelation when you realised and understood something about your faith that you'd never understood before. And you're like, ah, it's landed. So during this broadcast, I'd like you to perhaps reflect on what one or two of those moments actually were. What was it that brought real personal content to your understanding? Now, you might think, well, I just can't quite remember. But never mind, because we're doing some research right now, and that's stage one of the creative process, and the desire to know, the strong desire to know, begins the process. Here is a quotation from her diary, and I love the way she's so determined to understand. It's point 30. This is St. Faustina. "On one occasion, I was reflecting on the Holy Trinity, on the essence of God. She says, "I absolutely wanted to know and fathom who God is. In an instant, my spirit was caught up into what seemed to be the next world. I saw an inaccessible light, and in this light, what appeared like three sources of light, which I could not understand. And out of that light came words in the form of lightning, which encircled heaven and earth. Not understanding anything, I was very sad. Suddenly, from this sea of inaccessible light, came our dearly beloved Saviour, unutterably beautiful, and with his shining wounds. And from this light came a voice which said, 'Who God is in his essence, no one will fathom, neither the mind of angels nor of man.' Jesus said to me, 'Get to know God by contemplating his attributes.' A moment later, he traced the sign of the cross with his hand and vanished." I loved that. And notice that in all the accounts we hear about God in the Gospels at the moment, is always vanishing at the moment of revelation, probably so that we've got time to let it land and enter our season of receptivity. So isn't that beautiful? God reveals his essence by the sign of the cross, this willingness to suffer for other people in a way that doesn't benefit him in any way, shape or form. And this, I think, in reading St. Faustina's diary, I learn the difference between me and the saints. I might be able, just about at a pinch, to learn from my sufferings, not complain about them for John, but to more and more willingly, openly step out and embrace sufferings I didn't need to have for the sake of other people. This is the sign that people are embarking on the next stage of discipleship. So this is point 31 in her book, and it's like a little short story. It's tiny, it's like 1.5 paragraphs. But if you have an image that describes something that you realised, this is a form you could write it in as well. Because people think that poems are about rhyming. The rhymes can help or they can take away. It just depends what they're for. I loved this description of a vision she saw. And again, it gave me a fresh perspective on what it is to be free of any kind of resentment. Anyway, see what you think. "Once I saw a big crowd of people in our chapel, in front of the chapel and in the street, because there was no room for them inside. The chapel was decorated for a feast. There were a lot of clergy near the altar, and then our sisters and those of many other congregations. They were all waiting for the person who was to take a place on the altar. Suddenly I heard a voice saying that I was to take the place on the altar. But as soon as I left the corridor to go across the yard and enter the chapel, following the voice that was calling me, all the people began to throw at me whatever they had to hand. Mud, stones, sand, brooms, to such an extent that I at first hesitated to go forwards. But the voice kept on calling me, even more earnestly. So I walked on, bravely. When I entered the chapel, the superiors, the sisters, the students, and even my parents started to hit me with whatever they could. And so, whether I wanted to or not, I quickly took my place on the altar. As soon as I was there, the very same people, the students, the sisters, the superiors, and my parents, all began to hold their arms out to me, asking for graces. And as for me, I did not bear any grudge against them for having thrown all sorts of things at me, and I was surprised that I felt a very special love, precisely for those persons who had forced me to go more quickly to my appointed place. At the same time, my soul was filled with ineffable happiness, and I heard these words: 'Do whatever you wish, distribute graces as you will, to whom you will, and when you will.' Then instantly, the vision disappeared." And so there is a remarkable insight, isn't it, into the realization that sanctity and love is just a complete triumph over all malice. And that was just a beautiful moment. And it made me think, really, that this is exactly what Our Lady had to do when the church began, wasn't it? There were probably only three people that she that she didn't have to think of as having betrayed the Lord. And yet she was there to serve them from the first instant. Anyway, I'm going to share my poem with you now. I hope this is stirring up some kind of thoughts of things you might have realised. There might be a particular saint whose writings really land with you. And when you go and read about them, the language, the imagery just immediately gets you into a responsive mode and you're writing away. This is a poem about my moment of revelation when I was in Jerusalem. And as ever, the city of peace, the city of salvation, is a crossroads of many kinds of torment as well as many kinds of beauty. And I'd been there for a while and visiting Muslims, Christians and Jews and peace projects, not just in Jerusalem, actually, but all over Israel with the Sisters of Zion. And it was just so painful to see how much suffering and conflict there was, as well as how much beauty and reconciliation there was amongst good people. At any rate, I'd found it all rather agonising, and I definitely needed a moment of stillness to cope with it all. And so I visited the garden tomb and I stepped inside. And when I came out, I absolutely had to write down what I experienced there, because as in Lectio Divina, or in this case Scriptio Divina, there are certain words that suddenly become real to you in a completely new way, even though you might have heard them many times before. So this is called The Garden Tomb. The tomb was empty of all but light, and the sunshine blessed the opening in the roof of the tomb like a messenger from a brighter world. And in the absence of everyone else, both the living and the dead, whose endless needs and questions had been oppressing me darkly with the weight of their centuries of unresolvable agonies, they were suddenly present. They were there. They had blossomed instantaneously into being, unquestionably, as simple as sunflowers, the five words for the feeding of the 7 times 70,000, and power was in them, and I knew it then. Love is stronger than death. Let's hear it again. Love is stronger than death. Amen. 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 And so I was deeply relieved when I experienced this. It really did feel like a light, like a grace to have faith and hope that, you know, beyond the bounds of the world, hope had entered and the resurrection life was still active where people would let it in. And so those words that are simple had become imbued with even more meaning, and they had grown in dimensionality. So I wanted to think a little then about the sentence of Jesus to St. Faustina, because he said, you know, that his voice is quiet and that it's only audible by recollected souls. So it is worth making space to hear. And this process of creativity that I'm trying to encourage people into, even if they don't think of themselves as artists, is really just a kind of prayerful attention to what's really going on in your heart. And that's a really important thing. And again, I come back to Pope Benedict Emeritus, because I've been reading his accounts of the resurrection. And something that he points out is that when Jesus isn't recognisable, what's happening really is that, in fact, the people who are looking for the Lord in their hearts know that it's the Lord. It's their heart that's ready to perceive him rather than to see him physically. So that the readiness of the heart comes first. And Jesus talks about that, doesn't he? Those who have a heart to perceive. And it's John, the beloved disciple, isn't it, who was the first to recognise him. And we know that his heart beats as one with the Lord's. And I love these words of Pope Benedict. For me, Pope Benedict is the kind of the well master when it comes to words that leap out and make things understandable. I'm going to read you this little section about how he describes the resurrection. Jesus' presence is entirely physical, yet he is not bound by physical laws of space and time. He has entered upon a new manner of existence. I love that, entered upon a new manner of existence. Because this is held out to us as well. And he says this was entirely unforeseen. Although some of the Jews had expected a resurrection of the body at the end of time, there was nothing to indicate that it would happen before the end of time and that the experience of this resurrection would enter time itself. This was entirely new, that it would enter reality and still lie beyond it. And so this totally stretches our way of thinking about our own lives, just like hearing about Jesus giving St. Faustina a call both in this life and the next. And then Pope Benedict says, Jesus lives anew in the dimension of the living God. Wow. Lives anew in the dimension of the living God. This is what is being revealed to us, what we are being asked to share in, living anew in the dimension of the living God. Just love that. So for me, that's the match being struck, and I can see a bit more about the hope that's held out for me in the midst of difficulties, in the midst of disappointment, in the midst of whatever's going on in this crazy world of ours. God, love is just so much bigger than all of it, and it's all held within it like a little hazelnut in the hand of God, as Julian of Norwich saw in her visions. So I'm going to now present you with one more thought before your homework, which is, lying as it does, the day before the Feast of the Annunciation, I can't help thinking that this extraordinary moment when the angel speaks to Mary and what is revealed to her, something incomprehensible and entirely, again, outside of what was expected. I mean, the whole of the Jewish religion had been based on the fact that God is Echad, one. This is what they defended with all their might and were willing to die for. And yet she's being invited into this extraordinary novelty, which it doesn't make sense to the Jewish mind. The prophecies sound familiar because she's acquainted with the scriptures. She's done her research. But obviously her heart must have recognised that although she couldn't see how it all made sense, this was the Lord. And so she was able to step out onto the existential edge of basically total incomprehension, really, and just say, behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it done unto me according to your word. Not evidently according to my understanding, but according to your word, and the word that then blossoms in her. So, moments of revelation. We're going to be trying to receive them and enjoy them. I'm going to play you a tiny little bit of music now, very, very short, 59 seconds. And this was because my friend Helen and I really were interested in this line from Exodus for a while when we were writing songs and stuff. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. And we kept thinking, what does still really mean? Yes, the Lord fights the battles, but we still have to do things, something, and then the Lord does the rest. So we ended up, Helen wrote the tune for this, and then we ended up writing loads of verses. And I thought, actually, because I can't find those verses anymore, one thing you might like to do is take that line and write some verses, if you're into writing songs. The recording of the line I'm going to play you, I captured on my iPhone when I went to Canada, and I was absolutely terrified. I had no idea how I was going to teach a week of Bard School to these students on the prairie in Saskatchewan, an entirely unknown setting for me. I ended up doing it 5 years on the run, though. It was an absolute joy. But I was terrified beforehand. But when I arrived, they had created a new classroom and they'd called it John Paul II. So there we go. I was so happy. And I sang them this line as a prayer to open the class. And what happened is they all just joined in. Well, and then I said, can we do that again? I'm just going to record it on my phone. And I found it the other day. and I'd like to play it to you because it's a sense of when you step out with your little line, your little tiny bit of something, it's amazing how other people respond beautifully. And I thought you would enjoy. They just did it entirely spontaneously. And, you know, God bless Canada.
The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still.
So, it may be that you'd like to write a song based on that line, or it may be that you'd like to think about a wow moment where the faith in some way landed and you're going to capture the experience of stepping into that space where you were, like I stepped into the Garden Tomb in Jerusalem and received that moment. It might be that you're just sitting at a desk or looking out of the window or watching a child, but just to relate the moment is so powerful for people, and telling the short story of it is a beautiful thing to do. Your moment of landing on understanding an aspect of the faith that you hadn't understood before. So, this has been the Bardcast, and my name is Sarah Dunordwell, and I try to bring poems, both old and brand new, from the listeners to the cutting edge of the contemporary world, because the cutting edge is grace. And if you would like to join a small group and do a course and travel through our whole Eastertide right the way up to Pentecost, writing poems and creating things, then do write to me and I will reply to you, hopefully next week, to introduce you to the Resurrection course that begins on the 16th of April. And of course, let's not forget that the Right for Life Academy, in which we encourage people to pray about and create around pro-life themes, is also going to be starting soon. So if you want to have your name put down for that, then you go to Right for Life, that's W-R-I-T-E, for F-O-R, life.academy. And on that page, you can apply for the day you want to come, and I will write back to you. God bless you. Pope St. John Paul II, pray for us. St. Faustina, pray for us. And a very blessed Eastertide. Thank you.
Ine lo yanum ve lo ishan, lo yanum ve lo
ishan. A Psalm of David. Behold, he neither sleeps nor slumbers, the guardian of Israel.
This was a Radio Maria podcast. If you enjoyed it, do please click like and subscribe on your podcast provider or leave us a review. Every bit of feedback helps increase our visibility and allows us to reach more people with the message of Christ's saving truth. And if you don't already, you can listen to Radio Maria live either online or on DAB in selected regions of the UK. We'd love for you to call in live and be part of the conversation. See our website radiomariaengland.uk for more details and a full schedule of programmes. And do please consider making a donation so that we can keep making more programmes like this. We are completely dependent upon the generosity of our listeners.